Welcome, everyone, to Faded Mates. We are so excited. Today, we have the brilliant Nicola Yoon with us. Nicola, we are feeling great about this. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I am feeling great about it, too. I have been looking forward to this for a while.
Yay. Well, I'm especially excited because, as all of our listeners know, I'm a middle school teacher. So having Nicola is also like it's both a personal and a professional thrill.
You can't tell your kids that you do this, though.
I can't tell my students about it. I actually am now a little afraid. They'll be like, oh, my God, I love like everything she's on. I listen. And then they were like, but wait, sounds like my English teacher.
It's not, everyone. It's not your English teacher.
I'm not an English teacher.
I love having a secret life. You know, when I was writing everything, I didn't tell my old job that I was a writer at all. Like, I kept it a secret for years and years until I quit. And they're like, what are you doing? And I'm like, I'm going to go write books now.
Well done.
Well, you're incredibly brave. I did the same thing. I wrote my first book in secret while I had, you know, this corporate job. And then I published it under a different name because I was like, no one can find me if I'm writing romance novels under this other name.
Right, yeah.
And then I quit, everyone was like, wait, you do what on the side?
It's like such a fun reveal, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So, Nicola, welcome. I'm super excited because I've read Everything, and then when I read, and I loved it, and then when I read Instructions for Dancing, I was like, oh, Nicola Yoon is a romance novel fan.
Yes, she is. It was amazing. Me too. I was like, this is bona fide.
I am a huge romance novel fan. Like, I have read probably everything. Across every paranormal, like historical, you name it, I've read it.
Tell us your romance origin story.
Oh, God. Okay, this is kind of a funny story, actually. So I grew up in Jamaica, the island, you know, in the Caribbean. And I want to say 8 or 9 one night when I watched Poltergeist, the movie.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, like...
Not a romance.
Not a romance.
This did already, it's taken a turn.
It's a dark turn, you guys. But anyway, so I was way too young to watch this movie, right? And I was at my grandmother's house. And I watched it. I was terrified. I went to sleep in my aunt's room. And there was a tree outside the window that was very reminiscent of the tree in Poltergeist, like the one that eats the child. And so I was convinced that this tree was going to like burst through the window and eat me, just like the movie. So I freaked out. I got off the bed. I went under the bed. And there I discovered my aunt's romance, my Harlequin romance books.
I love so this.
Under the bed. That's my origin story too.
Oh, come on.
It's true. My sister, well, not the Poltergeist part, but my sister kept all her books under the bed and then went to college. And then I found them.
They think that's a hiding place. I'm just like, it's just under the bed.
There are no monsters under there if there are books under there, though.
Right. So, like, I picked one up, and I can't remember what Harlequin series, because this has got to be before Blaze. Anyway, I picked it up, and I, like, read the whole thing, and I was 9, and I understood nothing, like, very little. Like, because there was, like...
But you weren't scared anymore.
No. I read it through. I was like, the bosoms are heaving, and the gorgeous mounds of flesh, and I had no clue, but I was totally and completely hooked. I read, like, everything after that. So that is my origin story.
It's a pretty great origin story. One of us.
Absolutely.
Even young, we were 9, 10, 11 when we started too. So welcome.
It's a good group. It's a good group
we're
to be in.
We're excited to have found you.
I love hearing people's stories. So actually that leads to a really interesting question, which is, so why are you drawn to writing YA romance or YA in general? What is it about that subgenre that really speaks to you?
Yeah, you know, so I talk about this a lot, but I mean, the thing that's so amazing about kids like 16 and 17 year olds is that they are just becoming, right? And as a part of that process, they are asking the big questions, like in some ways that adults have sort of stopped asking the big questions, right? Like they're asking questions about the meaning of life and whether or not they believe in God and, you know, what's their place in the world and who they want to be in the world. And I am kind of like that anyway. Like, I mean, I'm 10,000 years old, but I am really quite philosophical. So I'm always asking those questions. Like, I'm the person at the dinner party that's like, but what does it really mean? Right? Which is like sort of annoying if you're not like that. but teenagers are naturally like that. That's just a function of being that age. And so I think we just fit, like, personality-wise, right? Like, I love being in conversation with the kids, like, saying, you know, look at this, like, way of being over here, and look at this other way of being over here. You know, like, you know, let's consider all of these, like, sort of big philosophical questions. And then, you know, love is transformative. Like, love is the thing that makes the world go round, right? And I think people poo-poo, like, romance and love, except for it's the only thing that everyone always wants, right? Like, right. It's the thing everyone wants in any realm. Love of art, work, your friends, your family. Friends,
family.
Right. But it's the thing that everyone will do anything to get. And so, you know, I think we just sort of fit together. Like, I like big questions, and so do they. And love is the thing for me. So
I think this is a good place to mention that your husband is also a YA romance writer.
He is.
And so I wonder if you could talk a little about that, about finding each other and writing together and what, and of course you've just started, is it The Universe?
Oh, right.
You're launching The Universe, which, I mean, perfect name, perfect name is destiny, we say all the time here. But I wonder, talk a little bit about him, about you all, and then what's coming from you.
David and I met in graduate school in Boston in front of our first writing class, like our first writing workshop. And like, he disputes the way we met because he is convinced we met outside, but we met in class. Like, we've been married for 19 years and we've been arguing about this for 19 years. but I mean, I will tell you that I am a total goober. I am so in love with my husband. He's the best thing on earth. Like, we're so happy. Like, he's the person I want to hang out with all the time. I mean, like, I think that we have such a good marriage because we really like each other. Like, genuinely just like, I want to hang out with you because you're funny and smart, you know? We've been working on a thing together. We were actually just doing that before I got on to talk to you guys. And, you know, he's a romantic goober too. Like, he thinks about love in the same way I do. Like, there is a transformative power of it. I am better because I met him. And I think when I write romances, I want for the people to change because they met each other. One of the things I always like to talk about is like, falling in love with someone else is also falling in love with yourself.
Right.
Right. Like, you're getting to know yourself too. And that's what David does for me. And he feels the same way about romance books. So, you know,
that's pretty great.
I love it. Can you tell us a little bit about The Universe?
Yeah, so we have a couple of things. We have a new imprint at Random House Children's Books called Joy Revolution. And that's like dedicated to big swoony love stories by people of color about people of color, right? So like the big joyous, like lots of kissing, 5 pages of kissing straight, if we can get it.
Sold, you like it. Sign me up. Send it to me in a box every month.
That was born out of the fact that a lot of times when you see books with people of color, there are stories of sort of struggle and pain and racism, but pain is not all there is. You know, Black girls fall in love all day, every day. I certainly did in high school, right? People of color, just these stories are dedicating to showing the sort of full measure of their humanity, right? And that includes falling in love because it's human and everyone does it. And then the second thing, which is The Universe, is we have signed a first look deal with Anonymous Content to make movies, like big swoony love stories again. So both these things happened in the last like 6 or 8 months. So we're really excited.
Amazing.
We're also incredibly busy, but like, it's really good work, right? It's good for the soul.
Well, we here at Fata Mates are very pro big swoony love stories in all formats across all media. So
everywhere.
Yay.
Yeah. So you actually have essentially like 2 new releases out at once.
Right.
Because you're an underachiever.
Ridiculous.
And so Blackout, which is an anthology that you wrote with five other Black women and is kind of almost like the beginnings of love stories. I read it and really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Was also optioned by the Obamas. So,
right. You know. Yeah, so that, you know how publishing is, right? You have this news and you can never say it for like 10,000 years, right? So, yeah, so Blackout is, it's like an interconnected novel. And all six of us wrote like these different chapters with different couples. And Barack and Michelle Obama, the best people on earth, optioned our little book for TV and film for Netflix. So there's a movie and then six episodes.
Oh, that's cool.
And we get to write on them and it's like ridiculous. Like it's just,
that's amazing.
Like, I don't even believe it. I'm saying the words to you and I don't actually believe what I'm saying to you.
You have had a great, very busy year.
It's been a busy year.
Congratulations. Huge.
Thank you. Thank you.
So let's talk a little bit about Instructions for Dancing, because it just came out, what, July 1st, maybe?
June 1st. Yeah.
June 1st. Okay. Yeah. And it's terrific.
It's so romantic.
It's very romantic.
I can't even deal with how romantic it is.
It's deeply romantic. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's also, in some ways, I would say, and we're not going to spoil anything for anybody, but I read it first before Sarah, and I said, well, it leans very hard into the HFN category, right? As opposed to the HEA. But I think that it still would qualify as a romance in everybody's book, and it's very romantic. So talk a little bit about Instructions for Dancing, and it sounds like it was a really personal book for you, too.
Yeah, it really was. So I'll just like give the little synopsis. So it's about a girl named Evie, who is a huge fan of romance novels. But when we meet her, she's become quite cynical instead of being like sort of the romantic that she has been. And the reason she's cynical is because her favorite couple, her parents, have gotten divorced. So she's kind of miserable about that, and she doesn't believe in love anymore. And when we meet her, she's returning her books to like a little free library.
So tragic.
I know, right?
For listeners, like, this is how bad it is. She's giving away all her romance novels.
Right. She doesn't believe in them anymore. Yeah.
If I ever do this, something's clearly wrong with me. So Evie's pretty sad. So she's giving the books away. She meets this mysterious woman, and after the meeting, she develops this really strange power, which is whenever she sees a couple kiss, she sees their entire relationship, right? So she sees like the spoony beginning and like the sort of very contented middle, and then she sees the end. And what she takes away from this, having this power, is everything ends. Why bother? Like, why fall in love in the first place? Why not just sort of stay home and hide away from the world? But then it's a romance. So then here comes Xavier, like the super hot rock star.
Literally.
Right? And he's beautiful. He's spontaneous. He's really caring. He believes in living in the moment. And he really likes Evie right away. And she spends, you know, a long time trying to resist him, but he's irresistible.
Of course.
And so she has to decide for herself what love is worth, right? Like, whether or not love is worth the potential for heartbreak, because she knows from her visions that everything ends. So that's it. That's the synopsis.
One of the things that I think YA romance does, I was telling Sarah before we started that I, as a middle school teacher, kind of have this belief that there's two really important things YA romance can do, like almost like a continuum. And it's like angst on one side and humor on the other. Right. And so some books are really all angst, some are kind of all humor, but all have elements of both. Like that just seems to be a really important part of the YA romance DNA.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that that's obviously Instructions for Dancing is way more on the angst side. But I think that it's one of the things I think that YA does so well is it shows that that angst exists in all kinds of relationships for main characters, not just the romance, right? An adult romance, often like a person is doing pretty well and then they meet someone and it's like, do I want to get with this person? And in YA romance, it's like, no, every single relationship I'm in is like work in a way and I can't figure out. And I think that that's something. One of the things that's really interesting about X is that he has a model in his grandparents for like a wonderful, beautiful, happy people that have been together forever. And I think that it's, I don't know, I was just like really moved by her relationship with her sister, with her mom, with her dad, I mean, all of that really spoke to me. I was, not to get too personal, but I don't usually, when I read really great YA, I feel like I remember who I was. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I think Sarah and I want to talk about like the audience question with YA, but I found my parents got divorced and then I found the bag of romance novels. So I found kind of romance after. And to me, it was really validating. Like people actually do fall in love and it does last.
Yes.
It doesn't have to be like it was in your house. Right?
Yeah.
And I found myself really like thinking about what would it be like if I had found romance first and then my parents got divorced, right?
Like these books are a lie.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, there are a couple of things I'll say. So the reason I think a lot of YA talks about families is because kids are, you know, they have this push and pull, right? Like they want to be free, but you also want the security and the safety of your family. And those are the primary relationships, right? Like when I was 16, my mom and dad were in charge of my life, right? So like you have a relationship with them that you can't break and you don't necessarily want to. And so like, I think that's why it's important to put the families and put who the main character is becoming in relation to their families and then outside of who their families are. You know, when I wrote Instructions for Dancing, I was asking the same question that Evie in the book is asking, right? She's basically saying, is love worth the heartbreak? When I wrote the book, my mom was really very sick. And we did not know for a couple of years whether or not she would survive. And my father-in-law got sick and he was diagnosed with cancer and he died in a year, just like 11 months later. And so I spent like, you know, basically 2.5 years in a hospital with both of them at some point. And the overwhelming question I kept thinking of was, I love these people so much. And this is how I am anyway. Like I just love big. And why am I doing that? Right? Like you're going to lose the people that you love at some point. So why not stay home? I mean, there were days when I was just like, I am locking myself away in a tower. I will not let down my hair. I will not talk to anyone. I don't want it, you know? But of course that's impossible because to love is human. Right. It's like breathing, right? You can't stop. But that is the question I was struggling with when I wrote the book.
I think that the thing that strikes me about all of your books, I mean, so two things. One, we are going to get into audience, but obviously I can't make myself a teenager again when I'm reading your books. So when I come at them, one of the things that I keep coming back to with your books is that relationship with parents, particularly mothers. Like, you have, and I mean, this is partially because I am a mother too, so I feel very connected to these relationships and I love how real they are, but also getting back to what you were saying about feelings and what Jem was pointing out about feelings, these big, I mean, I write romance novels and we say like, oh, the emotions are huge in romance, right? But YA just takes every emotion and just amps it up to 11 and it makes the book so, you just soak them in. You feel wrapped in other people's emotions. And I think truly great YA writers like you have this kind of instinct to just sink a reader into every emotion that they have felt or might feel. And I mean, I've read my journals from when I was a teenager. If you have them out there, just be warned, you were certifiable.
all gas, no brakes on the feelings
it's
when you're
magnificent. Right? And I think romance readers and romance, this is me sort of preaching to romance writers, but like romance writers have so much to learn from YA. And maybe this is where we could talk a little bit about one of the things I've been thinking about a lot over the last couple of weeks, knowing that you were coming on, is this question of how romance seems to have, at the beginning of YA, appreciating that, you know, YA has existed for a long time.
Correct. It's on a continuum,
When we were young, there were so many fewer books that were written for us.
That's true.
I think young people today are very lucky to have such a wide variety of books available to them, telling so many different stories. And in the as the as the YA genre was ramping up, and I wrote my first book was a YA novel, and it came out in 2009, and then I moved to romance. But then it felt like romance had imprinted on a lot of these books in a lot of ways, you know, largely because of Twilight, right? That there was
right.
a sort of
yeah.
Stephanie Meyer had come yeah. from Pride and Prejudice, and so here we all were rewriting like that kind of arc.
Yeah.
And now it feels like YA has imprinted so hard on romance in we're all having a dialogue together here in this like YA romance dance.
You're right. Because I mean, everyone wants to read love stories. It's such a big category because of what I was saying before, right? Like love is the thing that makes the world go round. And the thing about teenagers is, you know, as opposed to adults, is like they're going through all the same hard things that adults go through, but they're just doing it for the first time, right? So it's harder, mm-hmm. right? And in some ways more intense, right? Because the adult brain is so good at saying, oh, that's just like this other thing and sort of poo-pooing it. But when something's brand new, you really notice it, right? It's like the colors are turned up, everything's just brighter and you feel more. And I think that that's what happens to kids because it's the first time. Like I remember the first time my little girl saw the ocean and I actually put that scene basically like verbatim into everything.
I remember.
Yeah, because like my little girl, when she saw the ocean, she just bum rushed it. She just like ran towards it, which is what I had Maddie and everything do, right? Because that is how you react when it's new. And when love is new and you haven't had your heart broken yet or you haven't been intensely in love yet, I do think it's a little bit different. It just feels like it's so acute. And I love those, like those moments of discovery, just like me as an artist, like I like that, you know, the newness of it.
I also feel like if we're being honest though, I feel like there's a lot of ways in which YA is far more progressive than romance, right? I mean, by which I mean, you know, adult romance, especially traditionally published romance is still very cishet. It's still very mm-hmm. white, right? And it's like, you kind of like, there's still this sense of, you know, that publishing kind of gatekeeping, right? Whereas when you're looking at YA romance, it really is like every love story that you can think of, you can find in mm-hmm. YA romance.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's something that, you know, if I worry about, and not in the sense that like, because I think we're going to lose YA readers who are like, this is, why can't I have this in adult romance? I got this my entire childhood from right. YA.
Yeah.
And now you people are like, no, here's some more white folks, you right. know, here's some more MF romance. And that's, I think, a thing that if our readers, you know, you might have heard that that's the case, but I'm telling you, it is the case. And it's a place where we really now need to play some serious catch up to give people the stories they want and they deserve and that we all want and deserve.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think one of the things, I think that YA has come a long way and has a long way to go. But I think one of the things that's sort of weird is this idea that if they're like, say, Black main characters or gay main characters, then that's only for Black people or right. only for gay people, which is crazy, right? You can learn about the world and love from anyone,
right?
Like, we are not defined by these sort of external identifiers. And like, I mean, I swear to God, I spent my entire 20s just trying to be defined as Nikki and nothing else, right? I just like, I'm just the weird girl with blue hair. That's it, right? And so, you know, we need to get over that idea that like books are for certain people because of the main characters who are in them. Like, books are for everyone. You can learn from anyone. Like, you can learn as much from a main character who's disabled as you can learn from someone who's, like, you know, able-bodied. So, you know, and we just need everyone to be allowed the full measure of their humanity, right? We just need to put all the stories out there, right? Like, I am tired of reading stories about racism. Honestly, like I just can't, it can't be the only
story
I ever see brown girls in. It just can't, right? Like I just want some kissing. Give me some kissing for the love of God.
Same.
So it's like my daily mantra.
One other, exactly. I'm like every day, I'm like, where will I get my quota of kissing? One of the things I want to talk about, and it'll be interesting because I'm a teacher, really, right, in my day job, is one of my concerns as a teacher is like what I would say is the influence of adults on YA, right? Because my students know when a book is really not for them. I don't know how they know, but they do, right? So it'll be a book where I'll be like, all these adult readers of YA will be like, oh my God, this book's amazing. And kids will be like, garbage, I don't want it. I mean, so how as an author do you balance out knowing that, I mean, what I like to say, because I'm a purist and I teach children and that's all I have to care about, is adults are guests in the house of YA. You're a guest if you're an adult. It's not for you. You can enjoy it, but it's not for you. But at the same time, I think I have to be honest. They're the gatekeepers. They're the ones with the money. They're the buyers. They probably are a huge amount of the readers. So how does that play out, if you can talk about it, as an author, when you think about that tension between the adult reader versus the teenage reader?
Yeah, I mean, I actually think this is a great question. I think about it as questioning, right? So like my books are for people who are asking questions, right? Like when I write a book, I'm always trying to answer something. Like, so for everything, I had just had my little girl. I was a nervous mom. And I was just like, what if I have to take care of her forever, right? And that is where that story came from. Like, take care of her forever the way you take care of an infant, right? And so, you know, that's the question of that book. And then in The Sun Is Also a Star, it was, you know, what is the power of having a big love? Can it change your life? How does fate conspire to push you together or pull you apart, right? So that was the big question. And for this one, as I say, you know, is love worth heartbreak or the potential for heartbreak? So it's just questioning, right? So like the books are for the kids who are questioning too, and for the grownups who are questioning. And so that's how I think of it, right? It's just that I think of it as being in conversation about a philosophical question. And then, you know, I have my characters and the world, but really what's driving it for me is like this thing that I like personally am trying to work out. Like, I can't let it go until I come to a place where I've made some peace with the question I'm asking. And so I don't really think of it like, you know, I don't want a 50-year-old to read it. If you have these same questions, pick up the book and feel and you're like kissing, then this book is for you. And if you're 15 and sort of like more advanced reader and you're asking questions too, or you're interested in questions anyway, pick it up. And so I guess that's how I think about it.
Don't ruin YA adults. That's, I mean, and like I said, I can be kind of a jerk about it, right? That's something where I feel like as a teacher, I want my students to be able to pick up books that are honest to them.
Yeah.
And one of the ways that I think adults sort of gum up the works is, well, you know, my child, or, you know, if you're a librarian or whatever it is, whatever that gatekeeping role you have is, right? Like, they're not ready for that. Well, they are. If they picked up that book, they're ready for it. Right. And if they aren't ready for it, they're going to stop reading it.
Right. I think there's a couple of things where there's like the gatekeepers who are saying they're not ready for it, and the gatekeepers who are sort of saying, well, how did that character make that decision? And you're like, they're 15. They make bad decisions. That is like, it's not like the definition of being a teenager.
One of the fascinating response. I mean, because I started with that one YA novel back in the day, I have a lot of friends who write YA. And one of the things that fascinates me is that review that's like, well, she just made such bad decisions. I'm like, have none of you been a teenager? I literally got my driver's license and then crashed into my sister's car in my parents' driveway that day. Like, we all make bad decisions as right. a teen. Our right. brains are mush.
Right. And these are adults who are making mistakes anyway and still at 50 or whatever. Right. And like right. criticizing the 15-year-old, and you're like, I'm sorry, are you perfect? I don't know what happened.
2 weeks ago, my son and his friends were in a golf cart and they flipped it over and my son landed underneath it. He's fine. My point is kids are dumb. And I say that with love, right?
Right.
It's not my son.
But, I mean, humans are dumb, to be honest.
Yes. Yes.
But I think that there's a way in which I want kids to be allowed to be kids in life, right? And I think that that's when kids sort of say to me, like, they can't verbalize it exactly, like, this book wasn't working for me. Often it's because the main characters are not kid-like in the way they act or perceive or whatever. So it's a really interesting dilemma, I think.
Yeah.
This brings up a question that's maybe kind of a writer-y question, but I'm going to ask it because I know a lot of writers listen to the podcast. So one of the things that I'm really fascinated by with YA and that I think all... So romance, as you know, we write generally pretty fast. I'm super slow, but most people write really fast over here in our part of the pool.
Yeah, I'm always so jealous about how fast you guys write.
Oh, same. But what's interesting is, and so we're always talking, Jen and I talk a lot on the podcast about how romance is constantly iterating the world around us, just like all genre fiction does, right? But one of the things that I'm really fascinated by with YA, and I think must be such a challenge, and so I'd love you to speak to it if you think about it at all, but is how you keep the books... how you stay relevant, if that makes sense. So you are, you know, not a teenager.
Right.
And it is incredibly, I sometimes think about this as obviously certain things, your books feel so universal because they're kissing books about love and, you know, universal concepts and questions. But I do think all the time about how the audience is constantly shifting for you.
Right.
And is it helpful to have a teenager? Is it, do you spend a lot of time asking her? Like, you know, what do I know that this is sort of a in the weeds kind of question, but
it's a good question. Yeah.
It's something that I think about all the time. Like, oh, it must be exhausting to write YA because you're always, the audience is churning, right?
Right. Yeah. And there are two parts to that, right? I think there is like the artistic part and then there's sort of the business part of that question, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the art part is, it's what I said before. Like, I write for big questions. And so kids are always questioning. So in that way, it doesn't matter how old the kids get, right? If you're interested in, like, you know, love and what it means and how it can change you, then, you know, you can pick up one of the books, right? But then the business part of that question is that the audience sort of ages out and, like, how do you get them to come back again? And, you know, like, I can't control that part, right? Like, hopefully, right? Like, you know, and it's one of those things that you, I can't write any faster than I do. I mean, I've tried. It does not work.
No, same.
Like, it's just poor. It's like bad writing. And so you just hope that they stick with you and that the books are sort of universal enough. As for, like, you know, whether or not I'm up on the slang, I don't care. I honestly cannot make myself care about this. Like, it's just, I write, like, slang-free and just assume that, like, the conversations that the kids are having and what they're talking about is a thing that's interesting because I have a 9-year-old. I do not have a 16-year-old.
Right.
And I know some, but
Yeah. No, that's how I would feel too. I'm just always curious.
I could never be on this treadmill, right? Like, I couldn't do it.
It's impossible. And by the time it got published anyway, that's like 2-year-old slang or whatever.
True. Yeah.
Yeah. The other day, my son told me to go look it up in Urban Dictionary. Did I know what that was?
And very big burn.
I pay mortgage here, kid.
I brought you into this world, kid.
Yeah. It was like probably the close. I was like, do you know what, yes, I know what Urban Dictionary is. That's how they get you when they're 18. So let's talk about, are we ready to give some recommendations?
Yeah, let's talk about some books.
Okay. So I obviously recommend both Blackout and Instructions for Dancing. We've talked about those, but I would like to talk about Full Disclosure by Cameron Garrett, which is, I really like this questioning stance. I love it. This is like a thing in my classroom, right? Read with a questioning stance. In this book, Simone is HIV positive, but she's interested, like super interested in sex because she's like a senior in high school. And her dads are like so great and so caring and like take her, or like her HIV doctor essentially recommends that she go see just like a regular gynecologist for some of these questions. And they like go with her And I've got to tell you, like, the angst scale on this one is like super high. But also, like I said, manages to be really funny. But the thing that so she has this boy that she likes, Miles. She's into musical theater. She has these like two really good friends. But underneath all that, there is this layer of trauma that she's dealing with because at her previous school, the girl she really was like had a crush on, it was like kind of her best friend slash girlfriend. She told her, thinking that it would be like kind of cone of silence and that she would accept it. And instead, her friend told everybody and she had to actually leave her school. I think Simone as a character is like, I know who I am, but I have this fear that people will betray me. Right? How can I trust people with a secret they don't understand? And for me, as a kid that like who grew up in the 80s, when AIDS, like sort of the rise and fall of sort of HIV is like a terrifying thing, it was really fascinating to kind of revisit this, like what happens to kids now. Anyway, I thought it was a really terrific kind of YA romance. And like Instructions for Dancing, it had a lot of the like sort of like, who am I? Who are my friends? How do I communicate with my dads who like, she says this, like under normal circumstances, my dads are the kinds of guys who would like leave condoms in my, you know, in my bathroom. But instead it's like this question about like my safety, but also like the, you know, the weight of secrets and family drama. I mean, so I thought, but one of the things I also really liked about it is, it was very matter of fact about how even kids who feel that they have parents who are understanding, yeah, still have to figure out a lot of their own gender and sexual identity on their own.
Yeah. I mean, because, you know, I have a 9-year-old and like she is in some ways functions as another limb, right? Like you feel so close. But there is a point at which they have to separate themselves, right? And you cannot, as much as I want to, I can't help her through everything. Like I can't be there every day and answer every question. And also part of growing up is actually learning to answer those questions. So I'd actually be a crappy mom if I did do that, right? It's such a function of being a teenager that puts that tension of like safety and also, no, I need to fly away, right? And do things on my own.
Well, and the love interest at her new school is this boy named Miles, and they have a shared interest in musical theater, and they're, you know, and he's terrific. I mean, I think I did read this book more as an adult or a parent because I was just like, if he hurts you, you know what I mean? But I thought this is a good example of a book that is so richly layered with so many different Simone is really dealing with like, who am I in relationship to my parents? Who am I in relationship to my friends? Who am I as I'm entering into sort of a romantic and sexual relationship for the first time? And just like, who am I all by myself? And I really loved it. It's a terrific book. Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to read that one. I actually did not have a chance to read that one yet, but I'm going to take your recommendation.
You should.
I will.
What about you, Nicola? Do you have something?
Yeah, I do. So I'm going to just make sure I remember everyone's name in this. But I'm going to recommend David's book, My Husband, because it is like I understand that I'm in love with him. But also part of why I fell in love with him is because he's a great writer. And this is legitimately one of my favorite books, my favorite YA romances. And it's called Frankly Love. And it's about Frank, and it's, you know, sort of your classic fake dating book, right? So Frank is Korean American. His parents want him to date someone who is Korean American, but he is in love with a girl who is white. And then he has this Korean American friend, and she's in love with someone who's Chinese American. And so they're not supposed to be together either. So they decide to fake date each other. So Frank and his Korean American friend decide to fake date each other so that they can see whoever they want. And then you know how fake dating plots go, right?
Perfect. So, love it.
Point, they start to fall in love. What I love about this book is that there's a big love story, but it's also about how you fit right into America with as an immigrant kid. And I'm an immigrant kid too, because my family's, and I'm from Jamaica. So it's about like that little hyphen between Korean and American and what it means. It's about falling in love with yourself, right? And then and falling in love with someone else. And also it's hilarious.
Like, see, humor and anger.
It is. Right? You need it. You need it because that's what life is, though, right? I mean, even, I swear to God, even on my saddest day, I laughed at some point or smiled at something, right? But David is hilarious. Like, the boy, like, I think writing funny is very difficult. Like, I don't think I'm good at it, but he is really, really good at it. And so, like, the whole time, like, you're just sort of effortlessly falling through this book. But, you know, he's talking about big things and, you know, he can write a good kissing scene, like, as it turns out.
I love it.
Just a skill.
So I came at this as thinking about how our general listeners, how Fate Mates listeners, many of whom probably haven't spent a lot of time reading YA and are looking for a book that they maybe can share, can like co-read with somebody young in their life who they want to share romance with, but maybe they're, you know, a little nervous about, you know, sharing their, say, Cressley Cole vampire books with.
Those books are so good.
Don't be scared. Everyone should have somebody who loves them enough to bring them a bag full of the heads of their enemies, is my view on this. And
our entire view.
Surely I will teach my 7-year-old this just as soon as
my
she's ready.
New favorite quote ever is what you just said.
Heads of your enemies as love language is really where I'm at.
You know, they really missed that in the love languages book, didn't they? that's a bad miss, I think.
So I went at it from that perspective. And so I would really love it if you all have not read this book, Renee Adia's The Wrath and the Dawn, which is the first in a duology. And I just think, I mean, talk about somebody. I know Renee, and I know that she's a huge romance reader, and it shows in the text, just the way it shows in your text. She's one of us. And this is a retelling of Scheherazade, of the 1001 Nights. And the premise is that the heroine, this young 16-year-old girl, she lives in a country where there is a kind of evil caliph, at least like that's how we're all sort of expected to believe that he is evil. Of course, he's not.
What a shock, Sarah.
Named Khalid, spoiler alert, he's the hero. And he every night takes a new bride, and right. Every night that bride is executed by sunrise. And so, I mean, it's bad news over there at the castle.
It really is. Yeah.
And the heroine volunteers, like everybody's pretty shocked that she basically like volunteers as tribute and offers herself up as a bride with like a hugely elaborate, really brilliant plan to end this kind of terrible reign. And then she gets there. And of course, because it's a romance, nothing is as it seems.
Right. There is way more to the story.
There is a magnificent ending to the first book that will immediately have you downloading the second book. And I don't want to talk too much about it. But what I love about this is that I think in romance, and we, Jen and I have talked about this a lot, but that paranormal, and you too, Nicola, as somebody who clearly loves paranormal, just like the heroine of Instructions for Dancing, we've really been on a downswing in romance. Like somewhere in a talk about gatekeepers, like somewhere in New York City, a bunch of editors got together and they were like, no more paranormal in romance.
We're over it.
Right.
But in YA, there is still rich, beautiful, world-built paranormal and fantasy.
Yes.
And in this case, like, this is a fantasy, but it also has this very kind of, like, intense romantic suspense slash paranormal slash fantasy feel to it. And it's delicious.
That book also made me really hungry because the way she describes food and like these feasts.
Yes.
Like I was just like, and I know Renee too, and I remember when I read this, I was like, I'm starving every time I read, like, what is happening? Like, I have to eat when I read your books.
Yes.
Like, and her books are all like that. There's always just a lot of, like, delicious food. And she's a total foodie, too.
There's a real lushness to, and food, this sort of speaks to that. Like, there's a real lushness to Renee's writing.
Yes.
I mean, you feel every color, the colors are all turned up, as you said earlier. Like everything feels like you're just basking in the glow of this delicious book.
Yeah.
And then she has a second series called, I think the series is called The Beautiful, but so is the first book in the series. And that's all vampires in 1870s.
And it's terrific. I love
New Orleans.
Yeah.
And also very lush. You feel like the humidity and the like heat and the, you know, darkness. And then these like dead bodies are all turning up and there's a hot, like possibly murderous vampire.
Like isn't that all always vampires. The way? Isn't that all hot, the,
possibly murderous?
No one does a bad boy like YA, let's be honest.
It's so really true.
It's true.
I mean, I grew up on that like 90s. If you are an adult lister right now who grew up like kind of before the Twilight era of YA, a book I do recommend, I'll just like, it's not a romance, is called Paperback Crush. Sarah, I told you to get this book, right? Nicole, I don't know if you've read it, but it's...
I don't have this one.
And get it in paper, everybody. But it basically is like looking back at like the kind of like the Babysitter's Club and like the what middle grade and YA looked like before kind of it became like such a huge thing. And it like, I was, you know, it was like this like Sweet Valley High, and there was like a series called Couples and Cheerleaders, and it was like all these books that I grew up reading kind of before YA became what it is now. And it was honestly a total blast from the past.
Oh my God, Sweet Valley High. I remember all of those. And like they were so wealthy and there were horses. And I just remember going, who are these people? Like I was like poor in Brooklyn. I was like, this is amazing. What is this world?
Who are these girls?
What is a lavalier?
Well, Jen always talks about the fact that Elizabeth and Jessica Trent, like, wait, Wakefield. Are they Trent? They're Wakefield. That's Jessica Trent is a different thing entirely. Elizabeth and Jessica Wakefield like are described always as, what is it, Jen? Size six and a...
Yeah, but somebody told...
Perfect size six.
Perfect size six. Somebody told me now they're perfect size four.
What?
Oh. What? That's not great. Nobody needs that.
No. I was like, let's raise a glass.
There's like writing props and like equestrian competitions and like all this.
All that stuff.
Like, what? Yeah. What's going on?
All I wanted was a twin sister so that we could like be the Wakefields.
But I wanted to be the evil one and not the, you know, kind of hapless good one.
Jessica. You wanted to be Jessica?
Of course.
Glad you remember.
Okay, I want to talk. So I recommended a really angsty YA. I want to recommend one that I think is instead of like veers towards like the really fun, kind of like funny side, which is I Believe in a Thing Called Love by Maureen Gu, which is a really terrific YA romance about a girl whose name's Desi Lee, and she is romantically challenged, I guess she would say. And so, you know, she's like this disaster. I can't remember, there's something her friends always call her and I can't remember off the top of my head, but like anytime she likes somebody, she just like screws it all up, right? And so she hatches this like perfect plan, which is she basically mainlines K-dramas all weekend and then comes up with like the rules of love according to K-drama. Because if she follows these rules, then clearly she's going to get this like really cute kind of, his name's Luca Dragos. And of course he's like the artistic kind of, you know, reticent bad boy type. And this is the one she has her eye on. And it is like downright hilarious because of course there's a lot of drama in K-drama that you probably shouldn't really do in your real life. Right. I mean, I think at one point, I can't remember, she like basically like throws something like spikes in the road so that he'll like run over it with his car. like, please don't do this. Back to like teenagers are reckless. But it's true, like a truly really funny YA romance too. That's just like so heartfelt. But I really loved it. And I think that especially now, like K-dramas are so big. A kind of a companion would be Nisha Sharma's My So-Called Bollywood Life, which has like a similar, like she's trying to get into film school and is like watching Bollywood movies for kind of advice for how to like live her life. And I think this makes a lot of sense to me because there are a lot of ways in which teenagers are like, how do I model, like, where can I look for models for how to do this thing right? And maybe sometimes they don't make the best decisions, but it is a truly really funny, great book.
To be fair, I'm not sure that many teenagers would know where to get spikes in to throw in the road.
I think that, right, this is the main issue. It's like access.
Exactly. Right. Thank goodness. Like on the wire cutter, trying to figure out where to get the best spikes.
Oh my God, I love that site. I spent so much time on there.
Well, we're going to all look right now. Where are the best road spikes to derail your love and have them dependent on you who needs a ride home?
So the second one that I'll recommend is You Should See Me in a Crown by Leah Johnson. And this one is on the lighter side too. It's just fun. It's poppy. The main character, whose name I cannot remember, and I do not have my hands on the book right now.
It's okay.
She is basically trying to get to be prom queen. And her school does not want someone who is gay to be prom queen. And she figures it out. It's just like one of these books that like gets under your skin. Like you don't even realize it's sort of building up. And you're laughing every couple of pages. And then by the time you get to like this one moment, you're going, oh my God, I'm really invested in this book. It like sneaks up on you. It's very funny. It's very sweet. And it's a happily ever after, which I think sometimes you don't get with gay characters, especially queer girls. And so like the political side of me is also happy about that, but it's also just pure romance, you know? So it's like it's just an effervescent and fun book.
And that author has a new book out like this week, but I don't remember the title of it.
It's Rise to the Sun, which I have right here. And I actually blurbed that one. It's also terrific. And I think, I want to say it came out last Tuesday, 6th.
My second one is also paranormal, and it's about dragons. Sophie Jordan's Firelight, which many of you know Sophie Jordan as a romance novelist who writes historicals and contemporaries and paranormals, but she also writes YA. This is a series. I think it's a trilogy and has a novella attached to it. But the heroine of this trilogy In the context of this world, the heroine is a dragon. She's a dragon shifter. And so when she comes of age as a teenager, she becomes a dragon. And she's able to shift into a dragon form. And over the course of many generations, there have not been fire dragons for many, many years. And when she shifts, she is this like special dragon. However, it's set alongside our current world, and dragons exist, but they are secret. Except, of course, there are hunters who know the dragons exist. And so they are secretly hunting dragons, and she goes out for like first fly with her friends, and she runs into a group of hunters, and there is a young hunter who is learning to hunt. And of course, everyone knows, because it's romance, this young hunter is the hero.
Right.
And it is so romantic because he's fat. That's the moment, y'all, when he sees her as in her dragon form, like with her scales for the first time, it is so hot because he like can't, he's so drawn to her and blown away by her. And he can't, they're in a cave and all the hunters are outside the cave and he sees her and he can't hunt her. He can't
hurt her.
You, can I just tell you how excellent you are at like selling a book? You are unbelievable. So I am like literally like I'm going, can I just download this or
write
your book right a second? Like you are amazing.
It's so good. And of course they go to high school together, I think.
Sure.
Why not?
It's well, it's like Buffy, right? Like they're at the Hellmouth or whatever. And so all the hunters and all the dragons go to high school together. It's fine. Don't worry about it.
I'm so getting this book anyway.
Oh, you're gonna tear through it. I like can't wait. I have a 7-year-old and I cannot wait for her to be old enough so I can like
to read it.
Push it into her hands and be like, read about this dragon girl.
The best feelings. Can I, before we sign off, I want to talk a little bit about a couple romances that I think would be appropriate for younger kids.
Oh, so what a fun idea.
We really talked, I think, kind of pretty explicitly like YA, which would mean like these were like high school age kids would probably read them or be most interested in reading them. Although I believe in a thing called love, I think would probably be appropriate for middle schoolers too. I mean, any of them would be like, I don't really gatekeep kids. Like if you think this book is for you, but I do think sometimes the issues seem like too old or whatever. And then kids don't read them because they just aren't into it. But there are a couple YA books, like middle grade, that I think are really appropriate. So one of my favorites is a book called Not Your Sidekick by C.B. Lee. And in this one, again, super high concept, the daughter of the town's superheroes falls in love with the daughter of the town's supervillains.
Perfect.
It's perfect. And she and Jess is the superhero daughter. Like all the kids develop their like superhero skills by like 16 or 17. And she has not developed hers yet. So there's also this internal conflict with her. Like, who am I if I don't even like develop the right skills? And I'm supposed to be a superhero. And then she's like really attracted to Abby, who is like a good kid, who's like, but my parents are the villains. And it's terrific. It's a really fun book and it's the first of a series. It's called Not Your Sidekick. And then I think there's like Not Your Villain or Not Your Hero. I can't remember which order.
Good. That's like right up my 9-year-old alley. Yeah.
Yeah. And again, even though the characters are, you know, kids read up. Yeah. So even though the characters are 16 or 17, it felt really I give it to 7th graders a lot and it's fine. Okay. And then if you want someone a little bit younger, there's a great book called Star-Crossed by Barbara Dee. And in this one, a 5th grade girl and her friends are putting on a performance with their drama teacher of like Romeo and Juliet. And the main character gets cast, I think, is Romeo. I can't exactly remember the way it works, but she is really grappling with like being attracted both to her like best friend who's a girl, but also, oh no, maybe she gets cast as Juliet, but also to the boy who is cast as Romeo. And so it's really a book about questioning identity. And, you know, this is something where sometimes you run across people who are like, kids that age don't stop
it's nonsense.
It. Yeah. And so again, and it's the characters in the book are 5th graders. So it's really appropriate even for like younger middle schoolers. And it's terrific. It's called Star-Crossed by Barbara Dee. So if you're listening, you're like, wow, I'm interested, but my kids are younger. Those would be two books that I highly recommend to your middle schoolers.
Wow. You guys have just increased my TBR pile by like a mile. For real.
We try.
You're welcome. You don't have anything to do, Nicola, as we've established. So here you go. Just lie
I'm
around.
I'm just going to read. But I mean, honestly,
books.
Yeah. I read two books a week, you guys. I can't help. It's like breathing, too.
Course.
I just can't help it. I got to do it. Yeah.
Well, Nicola, this was a real treat. Will you come again sometime?
You can just tell me when. Tell me when. Put out like the Nikki signal and I'll be here. This was awesome.
It was so really fun to have you. The book is called Instructions for Dancing. And that is out now. Blackout is also out now. Nicola, tell everybody where they can find you.
I am at Nicola Yoon on Twitter, but I hate Twitter, so don't go there. Find me at Nicola Yoon on Instagram, and I'm much more fun and relaxed there, and there are pretty pictures.
Nice. Well, thank you so much for joining us. It was a real treat.
Thank you for having me. This is really, like, I do a lot of things, and this was awesome. This was,
oh,
like,
I'm so glad.
Fabulous. Okay.
Well, you got to come talk about kissing, right?
Right. Hello. I mean, how bad could it be?
That's really what everybody wants to do, but then they make you talk about, like, smart stuff.
Not us. Kissing first, always.
And bags of vampire heads.
Exactly. Heads as love language.
No problem. Those
no.
Together.
Just like cheese and carrots. You can put that in your next book, Nicola. It's yours.
I am absolutely going to.
This is Fated Mates. You can find us online at fatedmates.net, where you can take the survey of listeners. It's just right there on the main page. You can also find on that website links to best friend Kelly for pins and stickers. If you are there, you can also click through to merch from Jordan Denae, t-shirts and laptop cases, etc. And also find Jen's amazing show notes. She really outdoes herself every week. Anyway, find us on Twitter at Fated Mates or on Instagram at Fated Mates Pod. And we hope you're reading something great this week.